The thing that is in room 101 is the worst thing in the world.
Jeremy Beadle.
Terry Wyman.
Birdie Song.
People like Annika Rice.
Jeremy Beadle.
Birmingham.
Beatles Spouse.
Des O'Connor.
Anything with Scylla Black.
Essex.
I want my MTV.
Jeremy Beadle.
Hello, I'm Nick Hancock, and welcome to another episode of Room 101, the show where each week a guest celebrity proposes a variety of dismal people, places and pop songs for membership of Room 101. This week, Steve Punt, actor, writer and comedian, will be attempting to persuade me to include some of his least favourite things in Room 101, alongside Barn Dancing and Back Off Boogaloo by Ringo Starr. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Nick.
Feeling critical?
Oh, I hope so, yes.
Good. Well, I think we're going to listen to the first one of your pieces of music.
Ah.
Yeah? So, Steve, what was that?
Yeoman of the Guard by Gilbert and Sullivan. I was in this.
Professionally?
Well, not the original production, obviously, but I was in a school production of this. And when we did it, I was 13. And what happened was that because at school you only had one rehearsal a week, it meant it took the whole term to rehearse the show.
Yeah.
And my problem was that in between casting and performance, my voice broke. And this was mainly a problem because the part I'd been given was the part of a young maiden of the tower.
Naturally.
Because I started the rehearsal period with a sort of high alto voice and ended up with a kind of nondescript baritone. And yeah. I remember this song because this was the first entry of the female chorus, which was basically a load of juniors.
Right.
It was an all-boys school. We didn't have any real girls. And we all had to clomp on in dresses and sing this. It was an awful experience altogether.
We could give you that chance now, Steve.
Well, I could give you a rough rendition of what it would have sounded like.
I'd like that. Go for it.
Right, the clomping on.
Hold on, I must just say, he's got a dress on now.
Our orders, under orders, gallant pikemen, valiant soldiers, brave in faring, bowmen scaring, in their bygone days of daring. There's my mum in the front row going, oh my God. It was appalling.
It's very impressive that you still remember the words.
I saw it because it's etched in my brain. Yeah. We were also supposed to ask, in order to look convincingly like women, we were supposed to ask our mother to borrow a bra.
Mm.
And then the idea was that you'd put two rugby socks, one down each cup.
Mm.
I was too embarrassed to ask my mother for a bra. And so I just used two rugby socks anyway. So I started this song with two breasts in roughly the right place, but ended with one in the middle of my stomach and one halfway down my leg, which was possibly a bit of a giveaway.
Mm. Okay, well, I don't think that can go in because that's your own personal tragedy, and I quite enjoyed the story, and I don't think it's fair on Gilbert and Sullivan just because your voice broke to put them into Room 101.
Oh.
And they're very popular amongst the Radio 5 listenership.
I'm sure they are, yeah.
Next, your most hated book.
It's just, rather than do a book, I'm afraid I would have to choose Hello Magazine.
For those of you at home, this is Hello Magazine.
This is what it sounds like.
Like that. It is another one of those great marketing triumphs of it being so bad that it's brilliant and you have to have it.
Oh, it's compulsively awful. It's just pictures of rich people, preferably titled. Picture of two minor aristocrats with their three inbred children sitting around them on an expensive sofa.
Mm.
Failing a title, it'll be somebody who's been in lots of miniseries. The key requirement to be in it is that you shouldn't do any visible work. There's certain people who don't bother acting anymore. They just allow Hello Magazine to take photos of their house every 6 months.
Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour's the one, yeah. Apart from being in Live and Let Die, as Solitaire, I cannot think of another film that she's ever been in.
No. What else have we got? Omar Sharif. Playing bridge with his granddaughter. That's a cracking picture.
Omar Sharif's playing bridge.
Yes.
That's a bit of a scoop for them, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, Caroline and Peregrine Armstrong Jones, of course.
Oh, jolly good.
No need
yes.
for a photo of them for me. I'm always popping around to the.
It's a magazine. And it's also so sycophantic. It idolises.
And it never says Jane Seymour, what a silly cow, does it?
Well, amazingly, it never says that.
It never says that.
It never says that.
Never, ever. Not even once. that section. When I think, obviously, Hello Magazine will be taking photographs inside Room 101 shortly. Hello Magazine visits Room 101.
Yes, that'll be good.
People now that most of the egg production in this country sadly is now infected with salmonella.
Yeah, obviously.
Well, that noise at the end was the clangor being dropped by Edwina. it was also the theme from Crossroads, wasn't it?
Crossroads. You know, any particular fan of Crossroads?
Crossroads, no. No, I was always having my tea.
Okay, next piece of music.
There's a lady who's sure all the glitter is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. When she gets there, she knows if the stores are all closed, with a word she can get what she needs.
Appalling. Appalling.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, of course.
It's one of those songs that just, you don't know where to start. Firstly, so for personal reasons, it reminds me of trying to teach myself the guitar. Because you miss the most important bit there. You miss the guitar intro, which goes do, 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 do. And there were four of us in my year at school who were all trying to outdo each other in learning the guitar. And obviously, learning the introduction to Stairway to Heaven was one of those things that you had to do. And Simon Broad managed it before me, or Matty Sweetapple, or Tim Coombe. And it's also one of those songs, because it's a product of that era where people thought that the quality of a song was in direct proportion to how long it was. And Stairway to Heaven is just, as soon as you hear that introduction, you know that that's it. You can go away, make a cup of tea, come back, it'll still be going. I just about have got to the guitar solo,
well,
which will take you up to
they're
bedtime.
They're probably trying to give some idea of the enormous distance that you would have to travel if you were indeed walking up a stairway to heaven.
Absolutely,
that's
yes.
Probably what they're trying to communicate.
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? What is that song trying to say? Because it's one of those things, when you're the age of that target market, when you're 16, you listen to that and you think, yeah, yeah.
That's true.
Right.
How very true, you think.
Right.
It's got a great little bit of the lyric here, which I think is very true. And we're thinking about it at home, actually. We might just break the programme for 5 minutes so people can think about this. Sometimes words have two meanings. That's clever, isn't it?
That's so good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What it is though, it's the slow ballad that all bands have to do.
Yes, it is. They always put one song in that they can play to their girlfriends in order to justify liking Led Zeppelin. Like, you're sort of spotty, unwashed, 15-year-old heavy metal fan.
Yeah.
If he's desperately trying to get off some girl who really is not interested in listening to hours and hours of heavy metal, is able to say, look, let me play you this one track.
Yeah.
Because then you'll realise that this band are sensitive and they can write these sort of gentle, romantic lyrics and then there's
it's basically, it's a song to get tongues, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah.
You can only listen to so long, and then when you get the nice sensitive one, you can sort of turn the lights down, and yeah, that's what it's for. Okay, well, I think Stairway to Heaven doesn't get into Room 101, and the reason being that I think it's still got a function to perform on Earth.
Well, do you know, I feel slightly ashamed that I chose it, and I agree with you on that.
Do you?
I think it would be
well,
a crime to lock that song away and deny it for future generations.
That's right.
I'm recanting.
And also, I've still never managed to get a snog out of playing it to any girls, so I think I still need it to be used.
No.
Okay then, right next, what have we got? It's some music from a television programme.
Love is like a butterfly, soft and gentle as a sigh. The multicolored moods of love are like its wings. Your heart feels strange inside. It flutters like soft wings in flight. Love is like a butterfly, a real and gentle play.
Oh, God. Sorry, I don't have to talk about that, do I?
Not really, but for a special bonus.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who was singing it? Because that wasn't the version that was from the TV programme. We got a special version.
Who was singing it?
One. Yeah.
I don't know, Mary Hopkins?
good effort. The bespectacled...
Oh, Nana Mascori!
Indeed! Nana Mascori sings Butterflies. Can't really ask for any more than that.
Oh, great.
Quite a good lyric in there as well. Multicoloured moods of love are like its satin wings.
Hey.
No,
right.
I think not. So, Butterflies, that particular... Well, obviously, everybody knows what a rubbish programme it is. And written by?
Oh, it's written by Carla Lane.
Carla Mad. Carla wrote three funny programs 15 years ago. Now, barking mad, not funny, patronises scousers, patronises everybody, complete rubbish. And people take it in and think they like it. Please, wake up. Any other programmes you particularly dislike, Steve?
There was one theme song which I wanted to mention at this point. Obviously, the BBC have wisely not allowed you to play it. But I did want to mention the title song for Takeover Bid with Bruce Forsyth. Because it's a marvellous song. You know, first of all, you know it goes.
No, I don't know.
It goes, Takeover Bid, I'm going to make a takeover bid, I'm going to be first on the grid to take over you. It's one of those songs that Brucey insists on singing. And the great thing about it is that Takeover Bid was obviously dreamed up as the title for a show while the sort of whole obsession with all things to do with the city.
Yeah, about 86.
Yeah, like it was that. Also dreamed up in the late 80s when the city was in. And they thought, well, Takeover Bid, that's a great title for a show. Then they came to write the theme song for it and they realised that they couldn't actually think of anything else to do with the world of finance that they could think of. So the brilliant thing about that about that song is the way it outrageously swaps metaphor after one line. It says, takeover bid, I'm going to make a takeover bid, I'm going to be first on the grid to take over you. Now, surely it's overtake, you see. They've done it. Because you know, sometimes words have two meanings.
They do.
And they've swapped it round there. They've made takeover into overtake.
Overtake, yeah.
And then they've gone off onto this motor racing thing about being on the grid.
But I respect them for that, because what they've done is they've had a programme idea in 1986, and it's come out in 1988, and they've changed it to be relevant to 1988.
Yes.
Whereas with Strike It Lucky, that idea was obviously thought up in 1536, and they didn't even bother changing it when it finally came.
Strike It Lucky. Yes.
Strike It Lucky. It was written, original programme idea by Geoffrey Chaucer.
Yes, yes. He still gets royalties on his estate.
And he wrote all Michael Barrymore's jokes. No, thank you.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Yes, it is. No. And I don't like Bruce's new version of the Generation Game.
Why is that?
Well. Because he's sort of clipping all the words off. You know, in the original one, he went, life is the layer of the game. You know the new one?
No.
He just goes, life is the layer of the game.
Yeah, but life...
He's rapping, that's my theory.
Scratch dub version.
Yeah, he was hoping it'd get played at raves and stuff. And
that's right, yeah. Well, at Butterflies and Takeover Bid, obviously, already in...
Is all Carla Lane's stuff in Room 101?
Carla Lane is... Carla Lane wrote Room 101.
I can't stand anything Carla Lane's written since Beryl left the Live of Birds.
I can't stand anything Carla Lane's written since What I Did in the School Holidays when she was about 8.
Yeah.
Right, fair enough, those are already in there. And now your most hated place, Steve. You told us a certain place.
Oh, I did, yes. Platform 5 at East Croydon Station.
For what reason?
Because it's a horrible place. because I went to school in Croydon and I had to go there by train, and I just spent 7 years, it seems, waiting at Platform 5 at East Croydon
Station.
For
which train?
Usually for the 4:20 to Red Hill.
Well, you're going to talk us through the stops, because anybody who ever takes a regular train journey knows all the stops.
Yeah, well, there's this awful voice that used to come on and go,
train out Platform 5, we'll call it Purley, Colston, South Merston, Red Hill, Ellsworth, Salford, Horley, Gatwick Airport, Three Bridges, Balcombe, Hayward Heath, Wivelsfield, Burgess Hill, Hassocks, Preston Park and Brighton.
Lovely.
And you could change at Three Bridges for Crawley, Ifield, Faygate, Wivelsfield, Balcombe, Christ Hospital, Billingshurst, Pulborough, Ambley, Arundel, Ford, Barnum and Bognor Regis.
Of course you could. Everyone knew
that didn't need
reiterating. So do you think it would have been better if you just spent 7 formative years of your life maybe on Platform 2 or Platform 1?
Occasionally it was Platform 2.
Was it?
Platform 2 is the platform on which I once heard an announcement on a cold winter morning. A train was, you know, half an hour, it certainly arrived, and suddenly there was this hideous buzz from the tannoy and this voice said,
I apologise for the late arrival of the train due at Platform 2. This train has failed.
And that, it had failed, and I couldn't help feeling sorry for this train. It was sitting there somewhere in Selhurst marshalling yards with some bloke in front of it wagging his finger saying, you're not allowed out today, train.
You've failed.
Because you've failed.
How could a train come back from that? You don't come back, do you, from
I think it was a chasing train after that. You know,
that, it was not
it
a train.
Just, it just sat there and didn't go anywhere.
Okay, so I'm afraid East Croydon Station
doesn't get in there.
Okay, you'll regret it. If you ever wind up there, you'll regret it.
Well, we really need East Croydon out here because it's the main station serving room 101. The next train from platform 5 is the 1204 to room 101, calling at Gatwick Airport, all motorway service stations, and Lynn Folds Wood. Okay, then, next, we've got some more music. Esther, 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 where were you when this song was written? Neil Sedaka, what a horrible little man. What is he on about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've always hated this song. It has this awful air of ownership about it, you know, this terrible feeling that this poor girl has reached the age of consent.
Yeah.
And he's therefore now Neil Sedaka can just jump on her whenever he wants.
If this song had been released by Jerry Lee Lewis, it would have been done, wouldn't it?
Happy Birthday, Sweet 11.
Sweet 9. Yeah. It's awful. My Little Tomboy now wears satins and lace. I can't believe my eyes. You're just a teenage dream. It's just pure luxury.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? There's a bit in it about when you were 13, we didn't like each other, and then I was your big brother. But now you're 16, I can just use you as a sexual object.
I don't think those are the actual words.
No, but I think that's the subtext, isn't
it? When you were 10, we didn't like each other. When you were 13, you were my funny Valentine. But since you've grown up, your future is sewn up. From now on, you're going to be mine.
Yeah, it's this awful proprietorial aspect to it.
But funny enough, it says music by Neil Sedaka, lyrics by Vladimir Nabokov.
Ah,
so that would explain it. Something of it.
Yeah.
You see, I can read books, people at home. Okay, let's put Happy Birthday, Sweet 16 into room 101.
Here comes that man again. Oh, that was the incomparable Baccarat.
Yeah.
They were extraordinary acts from about 1978. They were sort of Euro disco and they had two hits. That was the first hit.
No, that wasn't Yesterday I Can Boogie.
Wasn't it?
No, that was Sorry I'm a Lady.
Oh, that was the
How
one.
How little you know.
That was the one. Sorry I'm a Lady, because they were Spanish, I think. But like Boney M and ABBA, they were foreign.
They were foreign.
Good little faulty. But but they had all their lyrics translated into English, and consequently they had no idea what they were singing.
And may I say that Yesterday I Can Boogie is one of only two single records that my father's ever bought, the other one being Heart in Class by Blondie.
Your dad bought Yesterday I Can Boogie?
I remember my dad coming home from work and coming in and going, I've bought this record. I heard it on the radio, on Radio 2 this morning. I've been in and bought it this afternoon, and it was Yesterday I Can Boogie.
Oh.
I had to hide that record in my house in case any of my friends found it, and I put it... It was for 3 weeks in the freezer compartment of our fridge. It was. Yesterday I Can Boogie. Okay. So, incidentally, if you're ever visiting Room 101, Baccarat perform every night in the Reg Varney Room at 8 o'clock. Okay, now, your most hated film. Here's some music from it. I like that bit of shouting at the beginning. Can we go back and hear the bit of shouting? Because it's quite a good giveaway as well.
Oh, dear, dear. Yeah,
very strange.
Oh, it's from Gothic by Ken Russell. It sort of epitomises for me the sort of worst British film, contemporary British film you can imagine. It's set in the past. It's got no plot, nothing happens in it. It's a complete waste of money and space. And it's got the same four actors in it that you get in all British films. It's an extraordinary film. It's all like that. Chilly! What happens in it is that a boat rows towards a sort of mysterious castle somewhere. And there's two people in the boat, man and woman. And this sort of Byronic figure comes down towards the shore. And it turns out to be Lord Byron. And you know that because both the people in the boat go, "Hello, Lord Byron!" And he goes, "Hello, Shelley! Hello, Shelley's sister!" And then they all take their clothes off and there's sort of 2 hours of gratuitous sex and they take a lot of opium. And the point of the film, I think, is that it's supposed to have given Mary Shelley the idea for Frankenstein. this night of opium crazed madness. Gee. Whereas her brother, of course, went off and formed the Buzzcocks. It really just an excuse for Natasha Richardson to just appear with no clothes on for as much of the film as possible. And it's just an abysmal film. And in fact, I think all Ken Russell films.
Well, I'm going to go further than that, because that's the sort of guy I am, and I'm going to say all British films. All British films, apart from Chariots of Fire, made in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
I think we can have in there. Yes.
Excellent.
You got to realize, if we didn't have them, we would be nothing, you know, we'd just be in the gutter.
Struggling? Ooh. You know the music?
Now, hang on, the music is... No, I don't, actually. I'm struggling there.
The music was Rocky.
Oh, God, of course it was, yeah. Yeah. Well, who was the voice then?
I'll give you a clue. He'd be your Valentine, and you could be his.
Oh.
And things would be cool.
Oh, yes, yes.
It is?
Little Jimmy Osman.
Yeah, we'll quickly press on from that, I think. Yes. And I've got some more music for you. Garden party has to say. I've never heard that before, and I'd like to shake your hand for suggesting it. That is truly awful. That is classic example of sort of, this might be clever, but let's have a look at it. No, it's not, that's not clever, that's just rubbish, isn't it? That's it.
Yes.
Comic book view.
I'm glad you agree, yeah.
Social etiquette.
Yeah. It's Marillion who spent most of their early career trying to sound as much like early Genesis as possible. Yeah. Peter Gabriel used to write these sort of quite clever punny lyrics for Genesis, so Marillion thought, right, we'll write clever punny lyrics, and they're as clever as, what is it, Social Climbers Polish Ladders.
Yeah, this is a brilliant verse, this one I'm just reading here. Doctor's son, a parson's daughter, wears why not and should they oughter? Please don't lie upon the grass unless accompanied by a fellow. May I be so bold as to suggest Othello? That is truly dire.
But again, you see, it's the sort of thing where their target audience of 15-year-olds, like, are thinking, hey, yeah, right.
Good point, actually.
Right. I think we've made a major blow at the social structure of Great Britain here. Smiles polluted with false charm. Hey.
Right. Thinking about. You know, sometimes, Steve, words have two meanings.
That's true. Although not in the case of Garden Party by Marillion. Yeah, they have one meaning, and it's blatantly obvious.
Well, I'm afraid that doesn't go into Room 101, because it slags off rugby. And although the rest of it's rubbish, if it slags off rugby, that's fair enough for me, I'm afraid. And also, Fish does go and watch Hibs play football quite a lot in Scotland, so it means he's quite a good bloke, if stupid. OK, right, what's next? I think your most hated object, you got any objects for us, or not really?
I'll tell you the object that I've always really hated is the Bontempi electric organ.
The what?
That they used to sell in Woolworths.
Bontempi, hold on, let me, a quick bit of translation. What, the good time?
A bad misnomer. that's the Italian, isn't it? Bontempi, good time. But good time was very far from what you'd have with its object. Because you can walk into Dixon's now and you can buy a little Yamaha keyboard and it actually sounds quite good. But back in the bad old days, before the microchip, one year for Christmas I made the mistake of demanding that my parents bought me this electric organ, and it turned out to be a sort of glorified harmonica. It had a vacuum cleaner motor inside it, and it just blew air through this sort of grill thing. And so you turn it on and it went and then you try and play a tune and you play Three Blind Mice on it and it would go it was awful, and after about 10 minutes you'd completely exhausted its entire catalogue of sounds, which was basically that loud, that quiet, and
or
that
off.
Inaudible. Yeah. And the awful thing was, of course, that I didn't have the heart to say to my parents, I'm sorry, it's my fault, I asked for this, but this is rubbish. Yeah, it had to sit there and I had to pretend to be enjoying playing it.
Have Bontempi gone bust now? Because you don't see many of their instruments knocking about in the shops these days, do you?
No. When you look at, you know, Prince's stage setup,
yeah,
you're going to see a synclavier there.
Yeah.
you're going to see Korg, yeah. but you're not going to see
Bond Tempe.
Bond Tempe.
Bond Tempe doesn't get there. But Rick Wakeman surely used it on his classic album White Rocks, didn't he?
I'm always stunned by the depths of 70s tat that you're able to refer to. White Rock, the official film of the 1976 Winter Olympics.
That's yes. right.
Well, Rick Wakeman, I think, made a point of... He was trying to go for a kind of Roy Castle record. the amount of keyboards that he could surround himself with in order that no one would be able to see his shoes.
Yeah.
So the audience wouldn't just laugh all the way through the concert.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he had something like 20, I think, at one point. So... Statistically, there must have been a Bond Tempe,
in there. Whether he used it or not, we don't know.
Because when he wanted to do the, you know, the comb and paper solo, the Bond Tempe was ideal.
Bring back the Bond Tempe. I want it. I want it bad. I want it in room 101. I want it seen.
It didn't have any of these fancy rhythm machines. It didn't go. It wasn't even that sophisticated. It just sat there and it made kind of wheezing noises.
Mm. But I tell you what, if the next band had had a Bon Tempe organ, they might have been significantly better. What a brilliant link! Okay.
I mean, that has to go into room 101 for being the most blatantly contrived first single in history. It's that whole 80s thing of fame is the important thing.
Mm.
The important thing is not to write decent songs or be good at music or be a good band. The important thing is to be famous.
That was the terrible thing about the 80s. And thank goodness we're now in the caring 90s
yeah.
with the likes of New Kids on the Block.
That's true, yeah. Things have all changed.
Yeah, it's a better place.
You come along, and they didn't call their first single, you know, when will we write a good song? Or when will we release an epoch-making piece of music like Stairway to Heaven?
Yeah.
I really can't stand it.
Mm.
And didn't last long, of course.
No, and nobody liked Bruce, did they? Very, very, very small children.
Very small children, yes. Small enough for Neil Sedaka to probably
get involved,
write songs about, yeah.
Yeah. Words often have two meanings, you know.
So they do often have two meanings.
Well, I think that Bruce are already in Room 101.
Let's hope so.
They're Cockneys, aren't they?
They're from Peckham, yeah.
Well, Cockneys are all in there already, so I don't think we have to worry about Bros on that particular front. And I think we're just about there. So I think, what did you get in? I think you've got Hello Magazine, we've got Happy Birthday, Sweet 16, and we've got all British films since 1965. So I think you've done particularly well there. Okay, thank you very much. Room 101 was presented by me, Nick Hancock, and starred guest Steve Punt. The producer was Mr. Evans.
The thing that is in room 101 is the worst thing in the world.
Jeremy Beadle.
Terry Wilder.
Birdie Song.
People like Annika Rice. Jeremy Beadle.
Birmingham.
Beatles Spouse.
Des O'Connor.
Anything with Silla Black.
Essex. I want my MTV.
Jeremy Beadle.